Well, happy belated Valentine's Day. Now, I intended to say that a day late, not a week and a day late. But still, I wish for you lots of love of all kinds in your life. Now, I was going to talk to the kids about St. Valentine's. They're off on a trip this weekend. Do you all know much about him? He was the patron saint of love, marriage, epilepsy, and beekeepers, among a few others. It's an interesting combination.
Yeah, right.
There isn't actually a lot known about him, and there's some confusion because there might have been two different people with a similar name, but one of the stories goes that about 200 years after Jesus, he was this bishop in Rome, and the emperor Claudius had decreed that young people should not get married because it made the men soldiers weak. Or maybe prevented them from going to war. But Valentine performed weddings anyway. Even though he himself couldn't get married as a bishop, but this person who we now have caused a celebration for love loved people enough to do what was right in his mind by them and by God, even if it was illegal in the eyes of the government. Love for him was justice, even when he himself was not impacted by that injustice. I think that fits our story of Jesus and Jesus's call on our lives really well. Jesus says, love your neighbors, love your enemies. And he doesn't mean buy them hearts filled with chocolate. Although, you know, that could help win somebody over. Just saying, if you need to make up to somebody. Love means to want people to be whole, to be well, and to receive what they need. St. Valentine was imprisoned and killed for working for someone else's justice. That was, we could say, his cross to bear. We've entered a time of Lent where we're considering, it comes from the word lengthen, so we consider how we can stretch ourselves in this time, how we can grow closer to the way of Jesus, how we might work for justice, even if it's not justice that impacts our lives directly. More and more, we're seeing ways that we need to be involved in justice seeking in the world. That's what love of neighbor does. It cares for what they need, what injustices they face, and how we can use our privilege to benefit others. So even though Valentine's Day is one day a year, our boss, Jesus, asks us to love our neighbors every day. So happy ongoing Valentine's Day. And because I had to miss Ash Wednesday, for any of you who would like to be reminded that life is fleeting, we do have our crosses to bear. We go with Jesus on the way, and that could even mean giving our lives. I will have ashes available to impose on you during communion if you want. Some of you probably found other ways to get ashes. Some of you are like, nah, that's a Wednesday thing, and it's Sunday, I'm good. But they'll be available if anyone wants that blessing. But you know, it's hard to think about Valentine's Day without thinking about how love goes wrong, isn't it? Have you ever had your heart broken? Or ever had a bad breakup? Or ever gotten just so angry, whether it was somebody you're in love with or not, but you just want revenge?
Yes.
Thank you for your honesty. Did you know that zoos are cashing in on that feeling around Valentine's Day? I don't know where this trend originated, but it's gaining momentum. And they are called revenge fundraisers. And they've been catching on for the last few years. So if you're ticked off at somebody, an ex or anyone else, the Philadelphia Zoo will let you purchase a cockroach and name it and feed it to a skunk. In Poland, the same deal, except they feed theirs to meerkats.
Oh my God.
In San Antonio, not only is that an option, but you could also upgrade to a rat, which will be fed to a snake, and they'll send you a video so you can enjoy your revenge for quite some time. Uh-oh, critters among us. And I guess for the vegans among us that desire a more humane option, the Maryland Zoo will let you name a pile of excrement for anywhere from $5 to $20, depending on how mad you are. Yep. Now, the Maryland Zoo raised $10,000 last year.
Wow.
So maybe revenge isn't all bad? Sometimes we need nice legal ways to vent our anger, whether it's buying and naming a pile of poo, or attending kickbox classes, or retail therapy, as some people call it. For boundary setting on how we are to live with our passions, whether they're positive or negative, the Bible gives us some rules. And you know what it says. Do not murder. Well, I don't want to dig too deep. But in the last week, how many of you have managed to refrain from murdering somebody? I don't see enough hands, people. Okay, Linda, you didn't kill anybody this last week, right? Oh. Let me think. Good for you. And Cindy?
I have my hand raised.
Good job. Oh, my gosh. And Carol didn't? Not this last week?
Not this last week.
Wow, Joyce, you're good. Wow, I'm so proud of you. I should have brought stickers. Gold stars for everybody. Feathers in your cap. Jewels in your crown. I must be doing my job really well if my whole congregation is following the laws. I'm just going to pat myself on the back. Well, Jesus is going to talk to us today about this rule as we continue into the Sermon on the Mount. And Joyce is going to come and read to us from Matthew 5, verses 21 through 26. And we'll hear Jesus talk about this.
Matthew 5, 21 through 26. You have heard that our ancestors were told, you must not murder. If you commit murder, you are subject to judgment. But I say, if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell. So, if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar, in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. When you are on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to an officer, and you will be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you have paid the last penny. The word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah, so maybe it's good I didn't hand out stickers for all you non-murdery people. Because I might have to take them back after hearing this. Don't call someone an idiot or a fool, as other translations say. In this political climate, I don't know, Jesus. I suspect many of us are headed to court after that. The theme we hit over and over again in this Sermon on the Mount is that Jesus extends the law. He says fulfill. The law is like the surface of the water. Jesus asks us to dive deep, to go deeper. It's not enough that we can refrain from murder. I mean, that's good. But we need to go so much deeper. Jesus asks us to dive into our very hearts and souls and look to see if there's anger there. If there's a desire to diminish someone by calling names or to denigrate their humanness. Is there hatred we are holding on to? Are we responding to their evil with our own? Or can we somehow, by the grace of God, respond instead with love? Friends, Jesus' teachings are not easy. And this is the lesson we're going to get again next week and the week after that. That to follow Jesus, to take his teachings as our boss seriously, is to recognize that we have to go to a much deeper standard than the rest of the world. It's not enough to meet the letter of the law. Instead, we have to be transformed within. Emmett Fox was an Irish New Thought spiritual guide and leader in the early 1900s. I've been reading some of his writings on the Sermon of the Mount. It was published in 1934, nearly 100 years ago. And he argues in it that Jesus came to carry the human race forward into another realm of consciousness, to go beyond the laws that are just the surface level, and to be transformed deeply, and to grow spiritually into a new way of being. Outer compliance, not murdering, isn't sufficient. Our inner self must be changed. He argues that when we call someone a fool or an idiot, we're denying the indwelling of Christ in that person. I have to say, with the evil happening around us right now, just taking the U.S. as an example, whether you want to hold up examples of advice to not vaccinate against measles or the recent protection and promotion of cancer-causing glyphosate or detention centers where men, women, and children, many of whom are legally here, some of whom are U.S. citizens or tourists, some who are asylum seekers, are held in inhumane conditions, fed food with worms, denied medication, denied sanitary products, separated from their loved ones. Or we can look at the withdrawal from our long-held global commitments, like the World Health Organization. Or we might look financially at all the grifts happening simultaneously while cutting aid to those in need. Or you fill in the blank. Whatever's enraged you this week. We all have something. Every week there's so much that we can't even keep track, which I think is the strategy. It gets really hard not to call them something much worse than idiot. It can feel nearly impossible to believe that the indwelling of Christ is in them too. One of the retired pastors that I chat with regularly said that the only way she can curb that rage is to picture these people who are doing these awful things as babies. They weren't born this way. At one point, they were innocent. At one point, that light of Christ shone in them. And it's still there, even though they're a product of their upbringing, the society and influences and experiences that they've had, and they are broken. We're all broken. Their brokenness just is a different level. But Christ is in them, under all of that baggage that has blocked their light. I have found that concept to be helpful. Think of them how they were originally created by God. That is still in them somewhere. It may take meeting God face to face for them to find it again. And that's helpful when you see people who are doing really evil things. And these things need to be stopped. They need to be stopped from doing them. They need to be held accountable. We live in a society. That's part of the deal. But we can seek justice, and we can let our anger fuel our seeking of justice without dehumanizing the people. We can be angry in useful ways, which means it lights a fire under us to do something, anything, whatever it is, do something. But if it causes us to diminish them, to name call them, then it separates ourselves from them, which is how we separate ourselves from God. Now Jesus went on talking to his disciples about how to live together with one another. And he says, if you know there is somebody who has offense with you, in other words, that you have harmed, you've offended them, before you come to worship to offer yourself to God, go and get right with them. Or at least try. Make that effort. Doesn't mean they're going to respond, but you go. And he's not saying if someone offended you, go to them and tell them what they did. He says, if you know someone has been offended by you, you go and make peace. Seek reconciliation. There's so much to unpack in these few verses. But it all comes back to this idea of going deeper. That Jesus isn't just concerned about our outer actions or even our outer words, but our inner attitudes. Most people can manage not to murder. But can we swallow our pride and admit we were wrong? Can we go to someone and offer an apology for something we said or did? Can we let our anger move us beyond name-calling and rage-posting and do something good for justice's sake? Jesus' way will transform us. It will take us much farther than the law ever could. So keep listening, friends. We have much more to learn from this Sermon on the Mount. Amen.